Welcome to The Inquiry on the BBC World Service, with me, David Baker. Each week, one question, four expert witnesses, and an answer. This weekend, Brazil goes to the polls to elect its next president. Home to more than 200 million people and covering an area the size of the United States, what happens in South America's largest country has implications not only for Brazil, but outside its borders too. Going head-to-head are two very different politicians, the left-wing Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, known almost universally as Lula, who led the country from 2003 to 2010, and the present incumbent, Jair Bolsonaro, an avowed conservative whose motto is Brazil above everything, God above all. Their policies have polarised the country, with rival supporters even resorting to violence. So this week on The Inquiry, we're asking, how can Brazil's next president unite the country?
Part 1. A divided nation.
Even before the polarisation of this election, Brazil was an unequal country, with a huge divide between rich and poor.
Brazil is not a poor country, but it's a country which shelters a large amount of poor people.
Our first witness is Marta Achechi, professor of political science at the University of São Paulo.
There is a geography of poverty in Brazil in the sense that poor is concentrated in the northeast and north regions, whereas wealth is concentrated in the south and southeast regions.
And the poor are a big factor in any Brazilian election.
The vast majority of Brazilian voters is poor, so it's impossible for a candidate in Brazil in a majoritarian elections to win the election without making an appeal to the poor.
When Lula was Brazil's president from 2003 to 2010, life for the poor got better. Brazil was experiencing an economic boom, and Lula used that money to fund a social welfare program that drew millions of Brazilians out of poverty. In his presidency, Jair Bolsonaro has done the same, and both candidates are promising to continue their help to the poor if they're re-elected. The debate, though, is about how they'll fund these social programs, especially as Brazil is facing an economic slowdown.
Bolsonaro's agenda is cutting taxes and reducing spending, whereas Lula's agenda is to approve a tax reform in which the richest taxes will be enlarged, will increase.
As well as money, Brazilians are also divided over social issues. Lula's two terms in office and that of his successor Dilma Rousseff were marked by progressive policies regarding race, women and LGBTQ rights. Gay marriage, for example, was legalised in 2013. And policies like that caused a backlash from the right.
Brazil used to be a very tolerant country in terms of moral issues. So the broad picture of preserving the family no matter what didn't warrant a very big issue in Brazil 10 years ago, but now it is, meaning that the issues like abortion are very, very important for 20% of voters, those that support Bolsonaro and the extreme right in Brazil, and also those that are attached to Pentecostal religions affiliation.
Pentecostals, or evangelicals as they're also known, are growing in number and power, especially in the peripheries of the country's big cities where many of Brazil's poor now live. And they have strong opinions about morals and family rights.
Bolsonaro and some evangelical affiliations say that if Lula wins, churches will be closed, students will learn to be homosexuals in schools. So one important dimension of the accusations the right presents against the left in this campaign is that, let's say, the left represents a threat to families.
And then there's the Amazon. Covering nearly 7 million square kilometres, most of it in the north of Brazil, the Amazon rainforest is seen by much of the world as the planet's lungs, absorbing huge amounts of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. During his presidency, Lula reduced deforestation in the region by 70%. But Jair Bolsonaro has reversed that policy. The region contains huge mineral deposits and large swathes of land that could be used for agriculture. And Bolsonaro wants to exploit these to boost Brazil's economic output.
Preservation of Amazon is not a domestic issue. Preserving Amazon is important for the entire world as well, for its importance for the climate issues. So the outcome of this election is important for the worldwide agenda on the preservation of Amazon and for all those that are truly worried about the climate problems the world is facing now.
Divided along economic, moral, and environmental lines, Brazil approaches this election hugely polarized. So who are the two men whose job it will be to unite the country?
Part 2. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, or Lula.
Lula has always been a very important political figure in Brazil. He basically ran for president many times after the military dictatorship in Brazil was over.
Mônica Nebol is a professor in the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University in the United States.
But he was seen as someone who was somewhat radical in his ideas and in his views, and so his attempts at trying to become Brazil's president did not actually succeed until the early 2000s. And that happened because at that point, the population at large was just tired of the many, many economic programs that they had been put through in the decade before.
For decades, Brazil had been fighting rampant inflation. At one point in the early 1990s, inflation was so high that prices were higher in the afternoon than they'd been in the morning. By the end of the century, it seemed that the country had got inflation down, but it soon spun out of control again, and the result was widespread poverty, poor public services, and a very disgruntled population.
At the very end of the 1990s and the beginning of the 2000s, the whole sort of crisis issue was compounded by a drought, which basically left the then government with no option but to start rationing the use of energy. All of these things combined basically led to a situation where the population at large wanted something different.
That gave Lula his chance. But to win, he needed to change his political colors.
He had always had a rhetoric which was very radical in the sense of it was very left-leaning and very pro, a very big role for the state in the Brazilian economy. But all of that really shifted once he realized that he was actually a viable candidate. And so he shifted his rhetoric completely to sound much more like a social democrat.
And he was a hugely effective campaigner.
He has this uncanny ability to convey complex ideas in very simple terms. He had that ability to communicate and to talk to people about things and to reach every single range of the population in Brazil, from the highest to the lowest income, the most educated to the least educated. Lula had that wavelength.
Lula seized the opportunity presented by Brazil's economic upturn.
He basically stayed the course in terms of continuing with the policies that helped maintain inflation at a much lower level compared to what it had been in the past. But at the same time, he used the boom to sort of promote exactly the policies that he campaigned on. So these social inclusion policies, these social inclusion programs, social mobility, and all of that.
These policies led to a massive redistribution of wealth to the poor, giving millions of Brazilians their first taste of life in the middle class.
Over 30 million people who were benefited by this. And this movement, the social mobility that happened, that was a first in Brazil, because throughout Brazilian history, if there's one thing that can be said, is that social mobility was practically inexistent. People started buying cars. People who would use public transportation and would not have the means to buy or maintain a car, now they were able to actually buy a car, but also to, you know, have access to things that they didn't have before. Suddenly families were actually able to send their kids to private schools. And then these kids were later able to access university. I was a university professor in Brazil at the time. You could see it in who was coming to the university. Who were these students? The composition of the students changed.
Things started to go wrong for the Workers' Party, which Lula had led, almost as soon as he ended his second term. The economy was tanking, there were protests on the streets, and then, in 2014, came an investigation by the judiciary that revealed levels of corruption that were unimaginable even in Brazil. And Lula himself was caught in the net.
There was an issue regarding an apartment complex which Lula had received as a donation from a construction company. And of course, this was illegal. And that was really what ensnared him in the corruption scandal. And in the end, led to him being jailed.
The inquiry ensnared not only Lula and the Workers' Party, but also politicians from Brazil's traditional center-right, leaving a vacuum in Brazilian politics.
You had a lot of inflation, you had a lot of unemployment, there was no growth. And so, you know, this combined with the corruption scandal just led to a sense that, okay, no more. And Bolsonaro and his supporters were able to build on this sentiment. And Bolsonaro then presented himself as the alternative.
Part 3. Jair Bolsonaro.
When Jair Bolsonaro was first elected as a federal deputy, he was not someone who was taken terribly seriously. Even a few years before the election of 2018, when he won the election for president, he ran for the president of the lower house, and he got 4 votes, including his own, out of over 500 representatives. I'm Anthony Pereira. I'm the director of the Kimberly Green Latin American and Caribbean Center at Florida International University. He had what many people thought of as extremist views on things like human rights, on the environment, on equality for women and men, on gay rights, on quotas in the universities for Afro-descendants and indigenous people and low-income people.
And as a former soldier, he was unashamedly proud of the military dictatorship that ruled Brazil from 1964 to 1985.
He said that the problem of the dictatorship was that it tortured but didn't kill enough people, that it should have killed something like 30,000 leftists, and then there wouldn't be a problem of the left in Brazil. And he actually said that the military dictatorship of 64 to 85 was better than the democracy that replaced it in the 1980s.
As the 2018 elections loomed, Bolsonaro, still far on the fringes of the political world, started to cultivate a following on social media.
He was very good at using social media to reach out to his base and record tailored videos. He appealed to people's sense of frustration about crime and violence. He said, you know, you just have to have strong hand policing. You have to have violent policing and no mercy for criminals. The kind of views that you would associate with a backbencher, but not someone who was destined to become president.
But in October 2018, he did become Brazil's 38th president, arguing then, as now, that a leftist victory would lead to Brazil coming under communist rule. This time round, though, he's no longer the outsider, ready to upend Brazil's political life. He's been president for 4 years. So what is his legacy?
I think the significant economic achievement is the pension reform. At the end of December of 2019, it reduced the rise in the fiscal deficit. It calmed market actors. It calmed the financial sector to some extent. I would say another change which has made an impact on Brazil has been the liberalization of the gun laws, so making it easier for people to acquire arms. And we know that gun ownership has gone up.
And he has moved fast on his determination to exploit the resources of the Amazon.
The Bolsonaro government has really shackled the federal government's infrastructure for monitoring and inhibiting illegal deforestation in the Amazon region. It's been rising rates of deforestation, and this is very alarming to people who follow these things because there's a real worry the so-called tipping point in the Amazon could be reached, in which there's enough deforestation that the climate starts to change, rainfall patterns change, and the forest starts to die because of a lack of rainfall. And this used to be thought of as you'd have to deforest 40% of the Brazilian Amazon to get to the tipping point. Now people are being more conservative and saying it might only be 25% of the rainforest to be gone to get into that tipping point. And we're hovering close to 20% now.
Surprisingly, perhaps, for people from outside Brazil, the future of the Amazon is not a big topic in these elections. Bolsonaro's vulnerability, though, is that he seems only able to play to his base.
I think in some ways, Bolsonaro is his own worst enemy, because he's not someone who can kind of moderate his communication and try and appeal to the center. That's really not his style.
Jair Bolsonaro is currently trailing in the polls. So what's likely to happen if he loses?
I think there's some trepidation in Brazil about the election, because what's important is not just the result. The issue could be, what will the incumbent president say about the result and how will he react to it? He does seem to be preparing the ground for some kind of Trumpian defiance and rejection of the election result. And this could be a very dangerous situation for Brazil, and it could drag on. There could be a lot of chaos and confusion before a transition to another government takes place.
Part 4. What happens next?
Two candidates face off for the future of Brazil. One campaigning for a return to the social policies of his two previous terms in office. The other, he says, fighting to save the country from communism. So what kind of country will the victor inherit? And what will they do next?
Brazil is more divided now than at any stage since it became a democracy in the late 1980s.
Our fourth witness is Oliver Stone Cole, Associate Professor of International Relations at the Getulio Vargas Foundation, a think tank and university in São Paulo.
And I think that the campaign reveals this profound division where both sides believe that the victory of the other side is the end of the republic, where there's a mutual demonization, where, you know, there's tension within families, within companies, where colleagues no longer speak to each other, and where political affiliation is somehow almost treated like a religion, and where discussing compromise is seen as treason.
And whatever the result, those divisions, as we've seen recently in other countries, including Brazil's giant neighbour to the north, could mean people coming out onto the streets.
There are about 25% of Bolsonaro voters who think that Bolsonaro should not concede if he loses, because the only possible scenario of Bolsonaro losing is that the elections have been stolen. You could have a situation in which the president just says, I'm not leaving, and you have a couple of thousand armed Bolsonaro supporters surrounding the presidential palace and say, you know, try to get him.
The big question is, what will the army do in that situation?
A classic military coup is today unlikely because the majority of Brazil's population supports democracy. What I'm more worried about is a confusing moment in which there's a result that Lula's won officially, but there's clashes in the street, and then the armed forces will step in the name of protecting democracy against supposed threats from the left.
And the army may not be the only armed people on the streets if the election's contested.
The Bolsonaro government has also facilitated access to arms significantly over the past years. The numbers of Brazilians who have purchased arms has increased dramatically. So we're now in a situation where certainly political clashes in a confusing post-electoral scenario are potentially more dangerous because part of the electorate now is armed. And again, it's very, very difficult to predict exactly how that will play out.
Assuming and hoping that violence doesn't break out on the streets of Brazil, the first job of whoever wins the election will be to reunite what is a very divided country. As we heard from our second witness on this programme, Lula has a knack for bridging political divides. If he wins, will he be able to do the same again?
Lula has actually articulated a very large tent. He's sought to involve people from both the far left of his own party, but also the centre-right. So he's actually picked a conservative as running mate. He's really made huge efforts to move closer to three groups which are at the base of Bolsonaro's support group, which are agribusiness, the financial elites, evangelicals. And he's been quite successful in those three groups.
And if Jair Bolsonaro wins?
I think it would be very difficult to imagine Bolsonaro, who is a radical at heart and who has always insisted on mobilizing above all his most loyal supporters, be very difficult to imagine him reaching out to the left and say, we need to overcome this polarization. So I think that it would certainly be a fight for survival of Brazil's democracy.
Two candidates with very different policies on the economy, social issues and the Amazon. Right now, it's not at all clear who's going to win. But one thing's for certain, the victor will have their work cut out. Brazil is now more divided than it's ever been. So to return to our question, how can Brazil's next president unite the country? Well, the short answer is with difficulty. But that's not good enough for a modern democracy. Whoever wins next month, when Brazil goes to the polls again in 4 years' time, one thing's for certain, they'll be judged on how well they've risen to the challenge. A final word from our expert witness.
When you look at a series of global challenges, climate change, organized crime, where Brazil should be sitting at the table, without strong and democratic Brazil, I think the international community as a whole will have much more difficulty. I think that generates, of course, a lot of concern.
This episode of The Inquiry was presented by David Baker, produced by Annabel Dees and Louise Clark Robotham, researched by Christopher Blake, edited by Tara McDermott, and the studio producer was Nikki Edwards.
Wait, so you said you genetically engineered yourself?
I put a foreign piece of DNA inside my cells. Wow.
This is the sound of crowd science.
Don't do gymnastics over the optical tables, you see there, and you're perfectly safe.
No gymnastics.
No gymnastics over the optical tables.
Each week, the Crowd Science podcast probes your questions about life, Earth, and the universe.
So my question is about quantum computing. What exactly is this quantum computer?
With the help of researchers from across the globe, working on the answers themselves.
Superposition gives a quantum computer very special powers.
We can do very useful computer things.
How does this all work together?
I'll take your microphone and you can focus on the science.
Crowd Science from the BBC World Service.
Is that a big canister of oxygen in the background?
Just search for Crowd Science wherever you found this podcast.
That is incredibly clever.